Welcome to 44 and 1. I am, as always, G to the Vizzle. We got Tempest, who's already nicked into the whiskey today.
You're not supposed to tell anyone, oh my god! They can't know about my addictions. So I never talk about them on TikTok.
Take two. Welcome to 44 and 1.
I'm joking, it's fine. I'm just kidding. Should we do this Kayshawn bloke first?
Sure.
I am, just for other people's benefit, I will cut it short because he fucking repeats himself.
It's like he had a word count he was trying to hit. Like when you write an essay in school.
If nobody marries you, like, what is your plan B? Right? Not to be funny, but what is your next step if you never get married? You see, a lot of people, their life revolves around marriage. Who's going to marry me? Finding the right one. Right? Being married, having kids, and all these beautiful things. But what if it never happens? What is your plan B for your happiness? Because if marriage is your happiness, and that's the ultimate goal, right? Having kids is the ultimate goal. Having a house and a big family with that picket fence and that dog is your ultimate goal. What is your plan B if nothing?
So what are your thoughts on it? Because you sent it to me.
I did. I have multiple thoughts on it. In that, when I, the first few seconds that I heard it, it kind of sounded like it was a, you'll never be complete if you're not married, right? And then it's like, some people do this. And I don't know that a lot of people have that as their whole source of happiness, as many as he would probably presume. And I'm sure there are people who have factored into their life goal that they expect themselves to get married and have kids one day. But I don't think that for many people, it's the ultimate goal. What if the goals you have for yourself, whether that be career, travel, family, whatever, any goal you have for yourself unfulfilled would be distressing. It's like, it shouldn't be a goal. You shouldn't wrap your happiness around achieving one thing when that is just one part of an entire life.
Yeah, I feel like you could have had a more interesting take on it. Like you said, if he'd focused on, most of us will die at the end of our lives, obviously. That's when you die. And the
not in the middle.
No,
and then you come back.
Yeah. I wish I could respawn. I'd like to do this again and do it better. my life, not the podcast.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah. This is perfect.
Yes.
This is smooth as silk. This shit is.
Yeah. Well, you are. I'm the shit show. Come on.
I mean, I didn't want to say it, but.
Yeah.
You are the Danny DeVito to my Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, and I think it would have been more interesting that because the vast majority of us will die with our lives unfulfilled in some way. And how are you going to reconcile that with yourself? It's natural. It is what happens to people. Even if you're a fucking king or a queen.
There's always some goal that's going to be unfulfilled.
Yeah.
There's always something you want to do, somewhere you wanted to go, something you wanted to read, something you want to accomplish that's not going to be happen. That's why it makes me kind of like FOMO, like the fear of missing out, makes me so sad for a lot of things because I know I'm never going to hear every great song. I'm never going to read every great book or watch every great film. I'm not going to travel to every great. I know that. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay. It is what it is.
You just got to be comfortable with that. I think that you're not going to get to do everything you want. I mean, this is why I think it's tied in with regrets. Like, I don't have any regrets in my life. I have missed opportunities for sure. But life is about sacrifice and balance. And you have to work out what that balance is for yourself or what you can achieve within your means and your capabilities. Because if you start shooting for the fucking moon, you're going to burn up on reentry.
Well, it's fun. I read this cliche once that was kind of, it was supposed to be motivational, but it was like, shoot for the moon, then you'll land among the stars. It's like, but for some people, they'd be happy with that. Others would still be lamenting the moon they never reached.
That they're stuck in orbit around it and can't land.
Yeah. And I think it's.
Or they got vaporized in the atmosphere.
That'd be so literal. I think it's nice, like. You know, I think it's nice to have goals, but there's got to, I mean, like you said, like with anything, there's got to, not even a plan B, just how will you reconcile if your life doesn't go the way that you had planned it to go, regardless of the whole, like, marriage was such a simplistic example of it. And it makes it seem like that should be the end goal for a lot of people when it may not be. And for some people, they're perfectly happy staying single their entire lives.
Well, I guess we could talk about it in like, because it happens with really simple things. Because we don't mind people knowing that, like, I was going to come and meet you and your husband in a couple months ago, but I couldn't because my disability acted up and I couldn't travel. I couldn't fucking do anything. And I was like, I just basically laid out for a month and a half. And how, like, so that's like a small thing, really. That's not like a big life dream or a goal or something you've worked years to achieve. We'd work 6 months to achieve it. and then it's just like, how do you reconcile that with yourself, with the disappointment and this unfulfilled thing at this point in time that, like, you didn't, like, get to do this fun stuff that we were going to do together, like the three of us and stuff?
And I think it's a lot of, like, dwelling. A lot of people dwell on what could have been instead of what was, right? I mean, like, if you don't accomplish one of those goals, did you at least get part of the way? Did you learn something along the way? Like, there's something to be learned at every stage of it. I mean, and if it's like, because he comes back to marriage and he harps on the whole marriage thing. And I think if someone, because he says, what if someone, no one wants to marry you, which I think is a really negative way of
it's a negative way of putting it.
But at the end of the day, like, if that same person, you know, at the end of their years, it's not like, they were likely not single the entire time, never had a relationship the entire time. So they may have had a lot of fulfilling relationships that didn't lead to marriage, or they can realize that, like, you know what, I dodged a bullet, because had I married that person or had I been in that, I would have been miserable in that relationship. Like, it doesn't, just because you reached a goal doesn't mean you're happy reaching it.
Totally. I know a lot of miserable married people and happy and not married people, couples that aren't married. I mean, I'm in one.
But it's also made me think of, like, just any goal. Like, I've always had these, like, mixed emotions, mixed feelings about people who have always known what they wanted to be when they grew up, right? And, like, having worked in a call center and worked the evening shift, people were in school full time and then working part time. So, like, you'd get to know people. And there were a lot of people who were there, like, they're in law school during the day or medical school during the day. It's all they've ever wanted to be. And a part of me envies that because they have that surety of knowing what they want. But another part of me is, like, of two minds. It's, what if you get there and it's not what you thought? You hate it. Like, I had a cousin who went through law school and then, like, she was a lawyer for 6 months. She was like, fuck this shit. And she was out. But then also, are you closing your mind and your, you know, closing the opportunity for something else that could fulfill you more, that could, you could enjoy more, you could be better at?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a, with those people that are, like, hyper-focused, they're either, it's almost their destiny in a way, for want of a better word, that they were to become that. But also, I wonder how much propaganda they've been given over their lives that's pushed them into that. Because I know quite a lot of people that have had quite successful careers, but they're fucking miserable. Like, there might be a dentist or a GP or an accountant, but they're like, I never wanted to do this. I did it because my dad wanted it. You know, that sort of
thing. There's a lot of pressure for that. Like, a lot of pressure to family, follow in family footsteps, or, like, be the first one to do this. Or, like, my dad, for some reason, my dad thought, like, working in a bank was the be all and end all. And so he kept trying to push me to work at a bank or be a teacher. Those were his two things, right? Like, be a teacher, work in a bank. And I was like, both of those things sound awful. Like,
yeah. Genuinely.
Yeah. But I mean, I've fell into my job, my career, and I love it. I didn't plan for it. Like, there's no, maybe it's because I'm not a planner, because I had plans. I had planned nothing.
Yeah.
The course I took in college was alphabetically the first one in the course catalog.
I can imagine that. But the other thing is like, there's got to be, like, a middle ground in it, because it's based on your personality and your life experiences. And then for somebody like you with your personality, that suited you best. And then what, and, you know, like, well, your life's turned out fine. You know, you got hitched. You managed to con a man into marriage.
That was a surprise.
Is it still a surprise? Do you just wake up in some morning and think, what the fuck have I done?
You're still here?
Yeah, I haven't got rid of him yet. Fuck's sake. This is chili. That's what it is. I think that's what keeps you going.
And his French toast. He makes amazing French toast.
Well, he'd have to if he's, you know, being French Canadian.
He's from Quebec. They make chaton.
What?
Yep. It's a Sprite. I don't know what it's made with. I don't know how it's made, but it's
got popular, snails in it or frog legs.
It's a popular, Googling a recipe, it's a popular spread in Quebec. Well, that doesn't sound appetizing at all. It tastes better than it sounds. It's a cold pork spread with a texture that varies from smooth to chunky. It's like a pate. It's a pate-like dish. It is made from ground pork, pork fat, water, milk, breadcrumbs, onions, and spices. His aunt and uncle owned a small dépanneur grocery store in Quebec, and they used to always bring creton to family events, and it was...
Sounds like cat food.
It looks like cat food, but it tastes great. So does pate, and that tastes good too.
I mean, I can't speak. I come from a country where our national dish literally is cheese on toast.
Don't want to say anything.
But I think going back to this bloke, like, he's... The problem with his video is that he's so vague in all of it. Like, there's just no definition to what he's saying. We're not even clear if, is he being a dick or is it a genuine question?
Because I think because of the way it's worded, right? Like, what's your plan B if no one marries you is such a negative approach to it. And it's not, it's a goal of many, right? So if he had positioned it, like, again, as what do you do if you're, goals, if you don't achieve the goals you set for yourself, how are you going to get past that? And then provide, because all he does is ask questions, right? He doesn't provide any answers. So
no.
It would be great if there was like a call to action of like, start working on this or consider doing this, like something to help you get past, I've never fulfilled that goal or those goals. Because like you said, nobody gets to the end of their days and they're like, I did everything. Like there's always going to be one thing. I mean, even in the movie Bucket List, they had to get somebody else to carry them up to
I've never seen it. With my failed trip, like, I just kind of dealt with it the same way I deal with everything else. Is okay, so what do I do next? Like, I'm in a situation. Granted, I had a lot to deal with at the time.
Yeah.
But I became very task-focused and task-oriented. And I didn't actually get gutted about it until a few weeks ago when I was... Yeah, I feel really bummed out now. Now I've got rid of this, past this trauma point, like this time of crisis. Now I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
You missed Tom Segura, who was a good show.
I did. I know.
Shit Seats, good show.
I paid this. People need to understand this. I paid for my flight. I paid for my Tom Segura ticket. And I booked my hotel, but I didn't have to pay for that.
And we couldn't sell the Tom Segura ticket?
Yeah, well, that was your failing, useless friend.
Fuck yourself. The show hadn't sold out. There were people buying tickets at the show.
I'm seriously not bothered about it. I'm just glad you guys got the go.
The seats were terrible. He was this big.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were in the like penultimate row of the stadium.
I thought, actually, talking about like future and jobs and stuff, Tom Segura's got a really funny story about how his mum wanted him to work for the postal service. It's something apparently to do with Peruvian mums. They're like, they think like working the postal service, you'd be set for life.
Like my dad in banks.
Yeah, yeah.
Although the Canadian postal service, I don't know if it's still the case, but once upon a time, they paid very well.
Yeah, yeah. It used to be a good job here too. I used to be a postman.
And now, I mean, I've heard you say that before. And now, like, I think the job, I'm assuming, because I don't know, but I mean, I think going door to door was probably a lot harder than standing in front of like the community mailboxes. Just mailboxes?
No, I don't know what that is.
So when we first moved into this house, we would get our mail direct to our door. We had a mailbox and it would come into our mailbox, but then they replaced it with, it's like one massive box that has little mail slots in it. So when the mail carriers come, they open up the back of it, they chuck everything in, and like, we have a key, so we have to walk to the end of the street, open up our little container, take out our mail. It doesn't come to the door anymore.
They used to do that with water and stuff like that. That's really archaic.
They've done it, I think, to ease the pressure off of mail carriers, because they just go to one spot. They go to one spot, put everything in. So I think we have agreed that his question was vague. mm-hmm. potentially could have led to a good place, but was just kind of...
His delivery fell flat, collapsed like a flan in a cupboard, Sabrina would say.
As what in a where and who would say?
When I was a kid, I've been saying this for fucking 20 years, and it was like a really old episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And she was like, oh, my plan has collapsed like a flan in a cupboard. And then I've just been saying it ever since. And literally no one else has seen this episode that I've ever said it to. I've never had one person go, I know that.
It's a tricky thing to hold on to. Those years.
I honestly can't remember if this was a research study or fucking TikTok anymore, but everything's got warped into one. But isn't that like a bit of a male thing to have? Is like we seem to have better memories for that sort of stuff. They're like, oh yeah, I know this. And then we can reel off the whole episode.
I don't know. Maybe.
I wish I had that memory for research studies. Just see the author's name and be like, yeah, I fucking knew that.
It would be great. Like, we used to watch Criminal Minds, and mm-hmm. Dr. Spencer Reed had an eidetic memory. It was a good show for the first few seasons, but he had an eidetic memory. So everything he read, he would remember, and he could read like...
Is he the bloke that was in Lost? Have I got the right show?
No.
He doesn't have an eidetic memory. He's too handsome.
The character does.
It's so unrealistic, all these shows. They're all impossibly beautiful.
So you can't be handsome and have a good memory?
Well, you can't be handsome and clever. I mean, I proved that with my oodles of intellect.
Okay. So how do you explain Ryan Reynolds then, sir?
Well, he's probably really dumb. He never says anything in most of his movies. He just walks around looking pretty, and you just want to kiss his little face. But
he talks a lot in his movies, actually.
We've never seen Drive.
That's Ryan Gosling.
Oh, you said Ryan Reynolds!
Have you seen a Ryan Gosling movie, Numbers? Murder by Numbers?
No.
It's one of his earlier films with Sandra Bullock. I think they started dating after he was in that movie. And it's about him and his friend who try to plan the perfect murder as like teenagers. But then they get thwarted because he didn't take off his stupid thumb ring.
Oh, idiot.
Amateurs.
And which Ryan did you say that was?
That was Gosling.
Okay. And he dated Sandra Bullock?
Yes.
Bastard.
And then Ryan Reynolds was in a movie with Sandra Bullock.
Full circle. The Proposal.
Yes.
I've seen that.
Have you seen the behind the scenes stuff they did with Betty White?
No.
Where, because everyone's like, oh, Betty White, like she's everyone's grandma. She's super lovely. So they did this behind the scenes thing where like she'd be really, really nice to Sandra, but like a super bitch to Ryan. Oh, but whenever someone was around and like no one believed Ryan because when they were with Betty, she was like, he's being mean to me. Like, what a gem she was.
Mm. Yes. I don't actually remember seeing her in anything. I don't think she was that big a cultural figure here.
Who? Betty White?
Yeah.
Who would be the equivalent for you?
I think we got one.
Dame Edna. I saw Dame Edna live once.
Oh my God.
At my husband's Christmas party, he won, his friend who also worked with him won 2 tickets to see Dame Edna, and he didn't want to go with his wife, and I was like, yep, I'll go. So we went to see Dame Edna.
Why didn't he want to go with his wife?
He didn't want to see Dame Edna. It wasn't that he didn't want to hang out with his wife.
I thought, like, so you went with the wife, not the husband?
I thought
the husband was just like, I don't want to fucking go with that bitch. I take your wife instead?
We had a date. That's fine. That's nice.
Canadian swingers.
There's a town, supposedly, there's a town not far, actually, no, it's about a couple hours away from me, that it's known to be like the swinging capital of Ontario. The swinging capital of Ontario. Rumor has it, if you have like an aluminum star somewhere on your house, that signals to other swingers that you are a swinger. And if your garage door is half open, that's kind of like, hey, we're open for business. Come on and knock. come and knock on our door. Oh, you probably haven't watched.
Is there a vetting process though? Like,
I have no idea. I don't know the rules. I'm not on the newsletter. I'm not on the distribution.
I might visit at some point, so I need to know the rules.
Ask somebody who has the garage door open.
I had to knock on the garage door. Put my cats down.
What do you think of this? Yeah.
This flabby mess.
There's someone for everyone.
Yeah, true, true.
So yesterday, my husband and I are into vinyl, and changing this topic, not swinging, not vinyl outfits, vinyl albums. Needed to clarify that part. Thank you. Oof. We are into vinyl records, not that. So we buy compilation albums. So KTEL compilation albums. So we found one that was like this music from the 80s, and there's a song on it by Nick Gilder called There Comes the Night. And I was like, this is catchy. I look it up on SoundHound so that I could like buy the song. It is not available in the Canadian iTunes. So I now am like deep diving into the song. I could not find any record of the song ever existing. I went online. I went to this website that was like secondhand songs. And like you put in the title of the song, it tells you every single person who has ever recorded it. And like, wow. could not find it.
What's it called? I want to have a look. I want to see it.
I think it's called There Comes the Night by Nick Gilder.
And how do I spell his last name?
Sorry, I did find it on YouTube. I did find the video on YouTube, but on secondhand songs, I couldn't find it. And there was nowhere for me to purchase it. And it does not exist on any albums on iTunes, so I could buy it and own it.
Are you looking for fun new glasses that won't break the bank? Go to zlul.com. They have daily flash sales. You can find frames as low as $2. Prescription, non-prescription, sunglasses, they have it all. Use my promo code to save.
We should talk about snipping fallopian tubes. What they call it again?
A tubal ligation or permanent sterilization. I don't want to talk about that anymore.
Why?
I don't know. Because it's going to get me mad. It's going to get me on like a rant. Let's talk about the misogynistic ads I sent you.
No, because you're better when you're having a rant. It's hilarious.
I know, but I'm not in the mood for a rant. Like I'm not,
I can put you in the mood for a rant.
I'm not, but that'll be me ranting at you, not ranting at tubal ligation.
Yeah, but
that's what it was. So okay, fine, fuck you. Then we got so someone posted in a Reddit subreddit called No Stupid Questions. Why do some doctors refuse? Or like people get upset about doctors advising on tubal ligation. So then the comment thread was kind of like doctors can advise, but they shouldn't refuse, right? Because then it's presuming that you know more about somebody's life choices than they do. And then there were a lot of women in the comments who were saying that they had been trying to get permanent sterilization for whether it's a hysterectomy or a tubal ligation for years, and their doctors kept refusing them. Because what if you meet somebody one day who wants to have kids? What if you decide you want to have more kids? One woman in the 70s had said her mom, after having three children, went to the doctor to have her tubes tied, and the doctor wouldn't do it without her ex-husband's permission. So then there was a man in the comments who was kind of, he was going on. He also not only responded to the entire comment thread back and forth to me, but then sent me a private message to further his point that he didn't believe the women in the comments who were saying that doctors have said, what if your future husband wants, or what if you meet somebody, blah, blah, blah. There was a whole conversation around that doctors can refuse procedure. If it's not an emergency procedure, if it's not life-saving, they can refuse it. And then, but he tried to make the example of like, what if someone goes and says they want to chop both their arms off? Doctors shouldn't be able to do that, and it's such a terrible argument that like one is about reproductive choices and the other is
not having forced options. Disability.
Yeah. Like that's self-healing.
They're not the same thing.
That's totally not, but he didn't see it that way. He was like legally. And I think they all came back to legally a doctor could be sued, but doctors have been sued for less. If a doctor advises someone against a tubal ligation and they still choose to do it and move forward with it, that's their choice. So then I had even gone out and found like reputable studies where they had reached out to 1800 doctors to find out, here's the situation. You have these people coming in, they've asked you for this process, and upwards of like 30 to 40% of doctors were like, I would advise them. 60% said they would advise them, but they would do it. but they would like, here are your choices. But then there were in the 30s and 40s percent saying, I would refuse to do it. I would try to discourage them. I wouldn't do it. I see both sides of it. But if someone comes in, male or female, and says, I am sure this is my life. Doesn't matter who I meet. Doesn't matter. I don't want to have children. I don't think doctors should be able to be like, no, I'm not going to do that for you.
Okay. And I think that what's missing is the male experience of what we experience from doctors as well, to try and balance it out. Because I think that unless you get the male perspective to what we go through, you're not going to know how much misogyny is at play here, how much of it is male chauvinism. And the other thing that I'm pretty sure the studies might not even cover is the age and other demographic information of the doctors saying that. So what kind of
I don't remember the details of it, but they went out to male and female doctors of varying.
But like in their study, they need to stratify the ages, and they need to be very clear in their conclusions of which group is predominantly saying what. And I can't speak about these studies specifically, but a lot of studies miss that out. They miss out the context. They generalize the results too much in the conclusion. And so they give a false impression of what actually it is that doctors are offering and not offering. I'm not defending the perspective here that women should be refused their tubal ligation. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that what I often see with these cases that where women feel wronged by something in the medical profession, you will find that men also experience it too, and it's not a female-centric thing.
Agree, but I don't know if it's the same degree. Like I've seen a lot of stories, and I've seen it on TikTok, and like I've had in my personal life known people who have tried to reach out for tubal ligation and doctors have refused them. Even my mom had one and it was a hard time for her to get it. And there have been cases where doctors flat out refuse. And I have a friend of mine whose husband went in for a vasectomy and the doctor was pretty much like, are you sure? Yeah.
But still,
there is still some discouragement. I don't know that it's to the same degree.
But discouragement in itself is good to an extent, rather than like a flat out no. Like when I deal with my doctor quite frequently, and we'll always have a discussion. I think a lot of the times that people misunderstand where the doctor's coming from is that like what they perceive as a no from the doctor isn't a no. He's trying to warn you of your future choices. So if I go to my doctor and I say, dude, I need more morphine, my back's really bad. And then he's going to go, right, sit down, let's talk about this. And then we'll rehash the situation and what's going on. He'll remind me of various things. And then he doesn't say it, but I'm aware at that point from dealing with doctors so much that it's now up to me to make the decision. And then there's like a point with the patient doctor sort of relationship where people don't realize that they can push a bit further because they don't realize that they can do it because doctors don't make it clear that they can.
And I get where you're coming from, but then there are like tons of examples of women who have tried to push and the doctors have flat out
40% said, though,
I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, 40%.
In that study. But if you were to like go on, like seek out the other sources, 40% is still a significant amount, especially if you're in an area where you don't have access to a ton of doctors or the doctors in that area all kind of have that same thought process. Then you're kind of hooped because you have to either leave your hometown or whatever to do this, and not everyone has the resources to be able to do that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with the essence of what you're saying. I'm just trying to kind of add a bit more detail to the picture.
I get the difference between discouragement and refusal. I understand that part of it. And like,
no, but a lot of people don't, though.
Flat out refuse. No. Doctor, I really want this. I'm not going to do it. People get that distinction.
No, people don't. They honestly don't. I listen to
people. How do you not? I'm not going to do this for you.
No, they don't. They understand the flat out refusal. What I'm saying is that the bit that people don't understand is when they're discouraging you because they think that it might be a bad decision. I don't think you're giving people enough credit though. I hear them. I'm in the surgery frequently. I experience I've worked in the healthcare sector for a number of years, and B, I spend a lot of time sitting in the fucking waiting room, listening to people and their conversations. And
really shouldn't be able to hear that, though.
Not with the doctor. Patients talking to each other. And I have sat in consultation rooms working in at the NHS. I have sat in the consultation room with doctors, with nutritionists, with surgeons, etc., etc. And I've sat there while they're talking to patients. I've interviewed like 30 or 40 patients.
I get it. I think the difference in this instance is that when they are being when a lot of these women are being discouraged, when they are being refused, it often comes back to, what if your future husband, what if your partner, yeah. what if your, right? So it's not like they're not being discouraged to make this decision for themselves. It's, well, you may meet somebody one day who wants to have kids. So you should, maybe you just haven't met the wrong man yet. Like that's what that conversation comes around to.
So when I asked, like I was in my early 20s, and I asked to have my tube snipped, and the doctor asked me a whole bunch of fucking questions. And I was like, I don't want kids. I've never wanted any. He was like, but you might meet a woman one day that wants children. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I wouldn't be with somebody that wanted children. I know I don't want any. And he was like, well, if you want it done, you have to go private. And that's going to cost you like £500 or whatever.
Well, you were given that option.
Well, it's just that's part of their way of getting rid of you, because he could see that I didn't have the money to do that. So that's their way of diffusing the situation, of getting you just to fuck off, basically.
I don't know if that's an I don't know the Canadian health system well enough to know if that would be an option.
I mean,
and that's that argument has always pissed me off. It's like people have told me that over the years. She was like, what if you meet the perfect man for you and he wants to have kids? Like, well, then he's not the perfect man for me.
Exactly. That's what I thought. Fuck's sake. And I think
that, I made it very clear to my husband very early on. There's no buns coming out of this oven, right? It was.
Yeah. And like I was even having a conversation with the guy at work about it, because he just had a vasectomy. And then I was like, oh, that's actually a really good idea. I was like, did it hurt? I was asking him questions. He was like, yeah, but they won't let you have one though. You know that, right? And I was like, why not? He's like, well, you're too young. They'll come up with all these excuses, and everything he said happened when I went in there and asked.
And I get it, like if you're 20, right? Like I kind of get it, because a lot of people do change their minds. But there were even stories of women like in their 30s who had children, and they were like, I don't want any more. And they're like, well, you may change your mind. Like,
it's so bizarre. Like, it is fucking backward. Like, and then I think that, again, just to kind of clear up some of the what I was saying, is that there's going to be like a different percentage of each people within this, right? So there's going to be a percentage of patients who have seen a certain percentage of doctors have outright refused them. And there's been a very clear, no, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. And then you get another percentage of patients, and then they're split into two groups where they get like, they get the, they're trying to discourage you. And then some of them will think that's a no, and they'll just go off and like, be like, oh, they said no. And then not realize it was just discouragement. And then the other people who will realize it's just discouragement, and then they will push further. And then out of that group, a percentage of them will be successful and a percentage of them won't be. That's why all of these issues are too fucking complicated for people who aren't doctors or lawyers to have like an opinion about like that fucking bloke on Reddit. Like, it's too complicated for you to have that fucking opinion, guy. Like, you got to listen.
Not even his opinion. It was his flat out refusal to believe the women who were saying, this happened to me.
Yeah, and
he was like, no, it didn't.
Yeah.
And like, he even made one comment where, because there's another subreddit called That Happened, where people place these like completely implausible stories saying like, oh, my 6-month-old the other day did our taxes, right? Like, it's one of those. And she's like, this sounds like a That Happened moment where did everyone clap afterwards? And it's like, these are real women who were telling you things happen to them. And he's like, I don't buy it.
And then this is the thing that like, if you were like a researcher in that position, like you would listen to those individual experiences. And then even if it's only one or two women in the whole group, you would add that to the group that is like the deviant cases, the outliers who have been failed by the system. And then we need to figure out how to treat those, that group properly, because something is clearly fucked up. And then in the situation like with like where it's actually affecting so many women, like with the tube snipping, that there's something systematic going on.
Yeah. And for him to just flat out be like,
yeah.
Like you don't have to be a researcher to just listen to people, right? Or just shut the fuck up about it, right? Like, you don't need to come in and argue with everybody. Yeah. Just like, oh, that doesn't sound believable.
It doesn't affect him. It doesn't affect his fucking life. He's a bloke.
to all the comments and then message me privately.
Yeah, it's dedication, man. Like that's fucking audacity.
That's mansplaining women's experiences back to them.
Yeah, yeah. And then this is one of the things that I get frustrated with, just fucking online stuff. Just where you get into this position where, like, I'm trying to explain, like, the nuances of an issue, but people think I'm disagreeing with them. I'm like, I'm not fucking disagreeing with you. I'm telling you about the nuances that, like, there's a group that you're not aware of that you haven't covered in your video or your comment. And I'm addressing that, but I'm not disagreeing with what you said.
Some people may interpret that nuance explaining in the same, like, you addressed women's sexual assault, but what about men? Like, some people may think that comes off as a bit of a what-if-ery.
What-about-ery, yeah.
Which you don't like, but then you're doing it.
No, but I'm not, though. Like, it's completely different. But the way it
comes across might be interpreted that way.
No, because there's a difference, right? Because we're talking about a very complicated issue right now about women's medical choices, but there's a lot of stuff that's not being said in the conversation around that, because it's a research issue where we need to find out why are women being treated this way. And then as part of that, you need to understand, like, how are men being treated? Because if you understand how men are treated in that same situation, then you will know how deep is it, how deep is the misogyny, how deep is the like the male chauvinism in this. And then I was trying to explain about how different doctors will do different things, and then if you stratify their ages and genders and their specializations, etc., you can find out, okay, it might be only male doctors that are saying it, or it might be only female doctors are saying it. It might be only old doctors. Young doctors might be better trained, which is something I've experienced in my own medical care, that young doctors under 40 treat me way better and more humanely than doctors over 40. So I'm just trying to elucidate, like, the situation, whereas, like, the people in the whataboutry is like, yeah, I don't fucking care about that, talk about men. And it's a completely different thing, because they want to derail the argument and stop you talking about women's issues and only exclusively focus on men. And also, in a whataboutry thing, they won't talk about that, though. Like, I've tried to explain in detail about the other context and situation for everyone else and how that relates to the women's experiences. But these other people don't do that. It's about the context of how they deliver it. They just go in, well, I don't care about that, but what about men? And I don't care about women. You know, and they won't talk about how they're related and how they interact with each other.
And you thought I was going to be the one to go on a rant.
Fucking cunts everywhere, I'm telling you.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, and this is stuff that, like with that bloke, like, his response to the, like, the commenter that you sent me, like, it was just so fucking ignorant and argumentative that it...
There was no convincing him, right? Like,
yeah,
there was no way, because he was just so wrapped up in the mindset that all these women were saying these things to prove their point, or they were exaggerating it, or they were miswording it or mislabeling it, that there was no convincing him otherwise. And he got really hung up on the word choice, right? Like, there was one comment where I was like, women have been told, what if your future husband wants that? And he's like, they probably were told, what if you meet somebody and you decide that they want to, yeah, want to have children with that person, and then you change your mind? That's what they were probably told, and they heard it as that. It's like, those, like, that phrase is just a longer way of saying that phrase. Like, it's the same thing.
And in this case as well, what is actually important is how the woman is perceiving it. Like, there's nothing else that's important here. What is, because you're in a, like, you're in a power imbalance here, because you've got the doctor who is the gateway to your care and your well-being, and they have to speak to you in your language to get you to understand it. And if they're saying A and it sounds like B, that is a communication problem on the part of the doctor that the doctor has to solve. And I'm not saying that, like, doctors have to pander to people or anything. It's nothing like that. It's just that if there's a systematic problem that keeps occurring, that you keep saying A and it is routinely perceived as B, then you have to change the way that you're saying it.
It's, well, I mean, it's, I don't think it's pandering. It's just taking the medicine out of the conversation and speaking to people on that personal empathy, empathetic level.
I think that, I don't know how it works in Because again, I don't know who your patients in Canada are talking to in this situation. Because in the UK, GPs, general practitioners, they work. I remember when I said, I'm going to the surgery. You're like, what surgery? I was like, no. That's what we call our primary care. So in like every village and town, there's one or more buildings that's called a GP surgery. And that houses a number of GPs based on how much population they're serving. And then you'll get an appointment in that center, and the GP is the gateway to the rest of healthcare. And so they'll have a general understanding of the human condition. And then they'll be like, okay, right, I don't know what's going on. We need to send you to a specialist. Oh, I know what's going on. Here's some medication.
Yeah, ours are the same, but most people will have, or a lot of people will have, like a family doctor that they see consistently. So you always make appointments with that same doctor, because then they have your full health history. But then there's also, because there's a lot of shortages of family doctors, like in some places there are lists, like a lot of people need to die before you get a family doctor.
Yeah.
Like there's long lists. So there's a lot of walk-in clinics where you can just walk in. Sometimes you need to wait for hours to be able to see a doctor to get treated for that, so you don't need to have that family physician. The challenge with that is that if you do have a recurring issue, there's no cumulative record of your history, right? Yeah. Like, because it's not like, what would be great is if, and there were some, let me start over. What would be great is if every walk-in clinic gave you, here is your result, so you could take that with you and then kind of carry it with you. I did have one. There was one walk-in clinic that I used to go to where we used to live that would do that. Any copy of test results, they would give you a copy of those. So if you were to find a family doctor, you could take that package and pass it over to them. But for the most part, you're just seeing the same doctor over and over again if you can, or you're just jumping to walk-in clinic to see which one has the lowest or the least waiting time.
I will happily talk ad nauseum about the issues of the NHS. But for patient safety and patient consistency, nothing else beats it. Fuck me. That is appalling that you guys are treated like that, even in your system.
So my family doctor that we had passed away. And to get a copy of my file to be able to take that to the next family doctor, which he passed away five or seven years ago, and I still don't have another family doctor because... like the walk-in clinic I go to, I see the same doctor every time I go. And I'm like, are you accepting patients? She's like, I don't know if I'm going to be here. Because she's kind of going from different clinic to different clinic. So she's like, I don't know if I'm going to end up in this clinic. So no.
Jesus Christ.
To get the copy of my file was like $50 or $75 to get like a CD that had all my health records on it. Just his office. Like that was, I only saw him for 5 years when we moved here. I have 40 plus years of records elsewhere that
book.
Wow. I think if I had like a chronic condition, I would probably be more likely to collect all of my stuff. But because it's just
money,
like,
though. That's so much money.
Well, I'd only pay for it for that doctor because I saw him for a couple of things. But if I had, like I said, if I had a chronic condition, I would pay to get all of my stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
It would be expensive. Or I'd be more adamant about looking for a family doctor. But because it's like, you know, pap smear here, blood work there.
But you might have a chronic condition you're not aware of, though. That's the problem. And like, okay, so in our system, like...
That wouldn't come out of my... If I'm not aware of it, then no one's aware of it. It wouldn't come out in my records.
No, but I could look up my records. That's how I found out about my chromosomal abnormality that was tested in like 1986 that I didn't know about. It's because I can log on and I can look at my fucking medical records online.
But they wouldn't tell you that you had a chromosomal abnormality?
Oh, my mum just didn't tell me. It's just because it was done when I was a little kid. So I didn't know about it.
So where is going now? Some, not all, but some, like if I get blood work, I can log in and see the results of my blood work. But I can't interpret it. Like I'm just seeing what they're seeing. And then when I recently got the x-ray on my foot, I was able to log in to see my x-rays. But so they're kind of going in that route, but not everywhere does it. Like the other place that I got, when I got an x-ray, they were like, we'll call you in a couple of days and let you know what the results are. So you have to wait for the doctor to call you and you don't get those records.
Our GP services do all of that shit for us. And then our GPs will call us, our GP service.
So ours will usually say, we'll call you with the results. If you don't hear from us, give us a call back. Because, there's someone I used to work with had this horrible story of someone in her family who her doctor said, you know, we'll call you with the results. If there's any cause for concern, we'll give you a call. And so she didn't hear from the doctor. She never called. And then she started to feel worse and worse and worse. And so she went back in for more tests and they were like, you got I think it was like stomach cancer. And then like, why, what the fuck? Like, why did you call us back? And she's like, well, you didn't call me. So I thought everything was fine. And they're like, your results were lost. Like they just didn't get back. So that's why like a lot of the doctors here will say, call us in a few days if you don't hear from us, because they want to make sure that they have gotten your results. Because they're seeing how many patients in a day. They're not going to remember all that follow-up.
Well, I mean, I see thousands of, like, my doctor has about 4,000 patients on his list. And he sees me, like, once every couple of weeks.
That's crazy. And that's the thing with, like, family doctors. If they are so overloaded here, you may have an issue that you want to get taken care of quickly, but it's going to be 3 weeks before you can see your family doctor. So you'll just go to a walk-in clinic instead, because
down south they have a bigger problem than we do up north, because they're more densely populated, so we have less strain on our GP services up here. But then on the flip side, our GP services are few and far between, and also no one wants to live up north, so we don't get the good doctors that they have down south. But I love my doctor and he's fantastic. Anyway, if I want to see my doctor, I basically sit by my phone, right? I set my alarm for 7:59, and then I wait until 7:59 and 50 seconds, and then I start dialing my GP surgery. And then as soon as like the voice message changes, I hit one on the number pad, and then I get through to the secretary, and then I book a fucking appointment.
I used to be able to book my appointments online with my doctor, but I can't do it anymore. And they never answer their phone, so I have to call and leave a message, and then it goes back and forth. But there were like driving around town, like if a walk clinic opens at 9 o'clock and I'm driving around at 8:30, there's already a lineup of people outside the walk-in clinic. Jesus. And there are some where they will tell you online, or you can log into, I forget what the app is, but there's an app that you can log into that tells you what the wait time is for all the walk-in clinics. There have been times where like I went to a walk-in clinic once, like I got there when they opened, and then they're like, it's about a 4-hour wait. I was like, oh,
all right. We have that for accident and emergency. Yeah, like A&E. Like, all right. Like
your legs, 4 hours.
Ours is like, if you're like your legs fallen off or you've been decapitated, you go to A&E. And then it's a 4-hour wait is the target. Sometimes in busy periods it'll go over, and then then the hospital will get fined. So if they go for 4 hours before you get seen by a nurse or a doctor, they get fined financially by NHS England.
That's amazing. Here, like, I guess because a lot of people go to the emergency room here unnecessarily and they triage.
Same here.
Right. Like they're not going to see you for a cold when somebody else is coming in.
Yeah.
Gap to you. But like, there have been times where my mom was having like anxiety issues, and she kept thinking she was having a heart attack. So she kept making a secret to the hospital. Oh, and then we would sit there for like 8-9 hours before they would see her.
I've never had that.
Yeah.
I had maybe one or two bad experiences where I had to wait a long time, but never 9 hours.
Yeah, there were times
like 6 hours is the most.
I just can't. You got to take mom to the hospital. Like, I can't do it.
Do it again.
I was there all day with dad. I'm exhausted. I can't. So I'm like, okay, pick up my mom. And the really good walk-in clinic that has a ton of different doctors, multi-specialty, they're open till like 11 p.m. is across the street from the hospital. So we're driving there. My mom's like, go to the hospital. I'm like, no. I was like, I'm not going to sit there for 10 hours. I'm going to take you to the walk-in clinic. If they say you need to go to the hospital, we're right across the street. Mm. But you've been to the hospital like 3 times in the past 2 weeks with a heart attack, and it's never been a heart attack. So it's we're going to the walk-in clinic. She screamed at me the whole way. Take me to the hospital. If you're not going to take me to the hospital, take me home. I want to go to the hospital. We go to the walk-in clinic. It's like 10:30 at night. We see a doctor pretty quickly, and the doctor's like, there's nothing wrong with your heart, right? Like, I think you're having a panic attack. There's something wrong with your heart. And then she was like, doctor, if you think I should go to the hospital, it's right across the street.
Oh, bless her.
And he's like, no, you don't have to go to the hospital. Just relax, take a deep breath, go home. So then she went to see her family doctor a couple of days later, and her doctor gave her like anxiety meds. And then my mom was like, cool as a fucking cucumber.
Brilliant. Oh, bless her.
She was taking like half a pill a day. Mm. And when my dad and my grandmother were still alive, the two of them were like oil and water. So my mom, like, I'd be on the phone with my mom and I could hear my dad and my grandmother fucking chirping in the background. And my mom would just go, it's going to be a full pill tonight.
Do actually, there's a problem here where old ladies get addicted to opiates.
I think, like, there's a problem here too.
Yeah. Because, yeah. I can't remember if you guys have it. I think we spoke about it before, but like over here, we can get codeine over the counter.
No, not here.
Okay, so we can, like, it's mixed. You can get it either with paracetamol or with ibuprofen, but it has to be mixed with something. It's supposed to discourage people taking too much, but it doesn't work. And so what old ladies do is they're like, with their tot of gin at night before they go to bed, to sort of warm their cockles, they'll take the gin and they'll take a couple of, like, codeine with paracetamol, and it'll just give them a nice warm fuzzy feeling. And then they do this for years, and then they end up in an addict clinic.
Here it's prescription. Codeine is based by prescription. I don't know if it's everywhere, but I know in Ontario it's based on prescription. But yeah, there's a lot of people who, you know, I mean, they start with, they're like, oh, I've got a sciatica, I've got back hurts, I got creaky bones, and then
yeah, before you know it, you're like me. But the thing is like, the laws really need to be tightened up, because I think it's creating a lot of unnecessary addicts. Because to get over the counter, the maximum I think is 12.8 milligrams, okay? And then the tablet you get from your doctor is 15 milligrams. So there's no difference, 12.8 or 15. Like
my husband has gotten codeine once, and that was when he was going through like a lot of pretty intensive dental surgery. But yeah, even then he was like, I don't think I want to take a lot of it because I don't want to be like, what feels good?
I managed to not take really strong painkillers for about 4 years, I think. Three years. I was in the last year of my undergrad, and then I still didn't have opiates. I only had opiates when after my master's. So I was working at a university after that, and that's when I started the codeine. And so I'd been in pain for about 4 or 5 years by that point. Basically, every day in pain. Like, there's no gap. And I managed to go that long, but then the pain gradually got worse and worse, where like I could barely walk some days and stuff, and I had to fucking study and teach. So, but the doctor, this is the difference in treatment. The doctor I saw was about to retire, and he just whacked me on codeine, and he didn't send me to a pain clinic. He didn't give me any extra support. He didn't ask if I needed any mental health. He just went, oh, here's some codeine. You'll be fine. Yeah.
I used to get dizzy spells all the time. And it's not just like I stand up and I'd be dizzy for a second. It would be like just moving my eyes would have the whole room spinning for like a minute and a half. Like it was terrible. And I would go to like doctor upon doctor upon doctor. And each one was like, you know, follow my phone, whatever. They would do blood work and then just, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. Just go home. And I had one doctor. I went to a walking clinic at work because I managed to get to work. I don't know how I drove to work, not safely. And there was a walking clinic down the street, and I was like, I gotta go. I gotta check this out. So I get there, and the doctor says, lie down and tell me when the dizzy spell stops. And it was like a minute and a half. And then he went, wow. I was like, that's not reassuring. So yeah, he does the whole check my reflexes, follow my eyes, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, well, I can't see anything wrong with you, but if your ears start bleeding, just go to the hospital. And then sent me home.
What did he expect you to do with that?
And I went to like, and I didn't have a family doctor at the time. Every time it would happen, I was like, this is not, like, I fainted once. Like, I got so dizzy that I like fainted. And so I finally found one doctor who was like, oh, let's run a bunch of tests. So I got like an ultrasound, I got a CAT scan, I got an MRI, like all these things. And then at the end of it, he was like, I don't know. What's wrong? Your blood pressure is kind of low. Eat more salt. And that was the end of that. But it was like, I had to deal with these like disease spells for 2 or 3 years before one doctor was like, maybe we should do some more tests. I mean, it came back not really conclusive, but.
But they have to do the test. If they don't know, that's why they need to do the fucking test.
Yeah. But I also think that doctor was a bit of a, because every time I went to see him, he would be running like 17 different tests. So I think it was just his way of getting paid more.
Yeah, yeah, there is that.
Game the system. Mm. But
People have a lot. Yeah. Actually, one thing I was going to bring up was about the medical records, because you were saying about, and then I just remembered the bit I want to say about it. So our medical records are held by the GP service, but then of course people move house and stuff. So there's like a big central sort of repository of patient medical records for the whole of England. And so when you move from your GP, as soon as you leave, they ship your medical records to this repository. And then when you go to a new GP service, they take them out of the repository. But mine got lost.
Yeah, ours, we need to pay to move them. And I even got a letter saying, like, the office is going to be shutting down. You have until this date to pay this much money to get your records, or they're just gone forever.
How are they supposed to know if there's any patterns? Jesus.
That's the issue, is that, and then like if you go to different doctors, there's no doctor who will, and like they're very, I think they're very one off about it, because especially like seeing my doctor, they would never take a look at my whole history. It was just like, what are you in for now? And if it was like they weren't looking for patterns, I don't know if there was a way to call out patterns unless I would consistently, like the patients have to very much advocate for themselves to get these more, you know, take a deeper look into it, go with it. Like the first time I broke my toe and I got an x-ray because I wasn't sure, the doctor called me back and she's like, here's what you can do and here's different options and here's where the break is. And like, she sent me to a fracture clinic to get, to, you know, checked out. And then the next time I couldn't get an appointment with her, but the break felt different. So I was like, I need to know if I need to be wrapping this or staying on, like to treat it. Because I wasn't sure if it was bone or if it was like tendon, joint, muscle. So I went somewhere else to get the x-ray and saw a different doctor. And when I guess the x-ray technician saw the break, because he was like, when I was leaving, so the doctor will call you in a couple of days, but you may want to consider taping it up, right? Yeah, so yeah. He's like, you know, telling me, but not telling me. And then when the doctor called, he's like, yeah, it's broken. You should tape it up. Any more questions? Like, nope. That's fine.
Jesus Christ.
And like in the x-ray, you can clearly see that I have a heel spur, like a bone spur in my heel. Yeah. And like, not that I expected him, but it would have been nice for him to be like, oh, and if you see that in your x-ray, that's what this is. This is what you can do to treat that, right? Like, it's just that little extra, little extra mile.
Yeah. If anyone's wondering why I nodded then, it's because I have seen that x-ray. Just fully think I'm just agreeing weirdly.
That you saw the x-ray, then you just be like, yeah, no, that's fine.
I'm a doctor, don't you know? I have a master's degree in mental health services and population research.
Master's is doctor now, is that what?
Yeah there is, if TikTok's anything to go by.
Okay.
But I think this sums up the problem with just to bring it back full circle with the women getting their tube snipped. I think that, like, because we have, there's a lot of similarities between the problems in our systems, and that, like, there are benefits to the NHS, but that we also see a lot of the same problems, like you've just discussed. A lot of that rings true for some of our experiences as well. And the problem that I think that the patients are going to have, and I think it's less of a problem for men because there's less stigma than there is for a woman, and there's less of an entitlement to control when it comes to a man. If I synthesize all of my knowledge from psychology and combine it with all this medical stuff, that women have a fucking job to like go around to several different practitioners over a period of 2 or 3 years and find a clinician who is willing to snip their tubes. And it's ridiculous.
It also comes down to like the whole societal pressure of it, where like if a man decides to forego children to focus on his career, people kind of not applaud it, but they don't question it. Whereas if a woman decides to forego children, like there's so many people who are like, well, you're not a real woman if you don't have children. You're not, right? And that's kind of pervasive in that they expect women to want it. So it's weird when they don't, and the women aren't, you know, they're less than if they choose not to.
I think that's a really good example, actually, because the only place I experience that is with the Christian right wing. And they're the only group of people who say that a man isn't a man unless he has children. And like, they're the only subgroup that does it. I haven't heard anybody else say that other than like the weird like Weird Brigade on TikTok or whatever, but it's predominantly the Christian right.
It's weird, like when you saw, like, I think it was like George Clooney before he had children, everyone was like, oh, he's a confirmed bachelor.
But yeah, then yeah.
And they were like, oh, she's a bit of a spinster. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And even some of the word choices, like sometimes when I see like on Reddit and TikTok, they talk about men being child-free, whereas mm-hmm. women are childless.
Yes.
Well, like, no, we're also child-free.
One of the things that I remember we spoke about in one of our first ever podcasts, and we made a joke about Nulli Paris, because it's a word you hadn't heard before. Yeah. And we're like, there's a specific word for a woman that hasn't given birth, but there isn't for a man that hasn't procreated.
Yeah. We need to make up that word.
Yeah.
We should take votes. Put in the comments what you think the word for a male Nulli Paris is.
Yeah, yeah.
Mully Paris.
Yeah. Incel?
That's a whole other can of worms.
But why else wouldn't they procreate if they're not getting laid? That's the only reason. Otherwise, why wouldn't they procreate?
That'll be part two of this conversation coming up next week, because that's yeah. a whole other can of worms we need to get into.
Yeah, I have something to end the podcast on. Like, we're not going to have time to talk about it. I just want to throw this out as a can of worms. I sent the picture to you earlier, but I find it so fucking funny. So, everybody, what do you think of this? So, this is a man writing to another man, okay? Again, the context is that he's very, very right-wing and very Christian, but, like, a very controlling sect of Christianity. Always be wary, even if the woman you're courting is a virgin. Guard your heart. But this is even more important if she's not a virgin. Why did she fornicate? If it's because she can't control her sexual desire, that's a warning sign. She might cheat on you. And does she believe in contraception, abortion, divorce?
Gasp.
Because of the role she will play in educating your children, these are vital considerations. But it's natural that she wanted sex. Peak female fertility is around age 20. Women should be married and pregnant by then.
Isn't a woman's sexual peak in her mid-30s?
Late 30s, early 40s.
Oh. And men are in their 20s. So he's talking about men. So be wary if she's a virgin. Be wary if she's not a virgin. Just mm-hmm. essentially be terrified of women in general.
Yeah, exactly.